Though you may be completely unaware of it, oral dysfunction can leave you tired, in pain, or with an undesired smile. Dysfunction is a weed that can be eliminated by getting to the root of the problem. It can be as simple as doing exercises and modifications that can transform your oral and facial muscles. Myofunctional therapy can assist in healing sleep apnea, tongue tie, ADHD, or sleep disordered breathing, chewing or munching, or even help to eliminate teeth grinding at night. We're going to be talking today on our show all about myofunctional therapy and how the muscles below your eyes but above your neck are way more important than you might think. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Carice Laguerre is a leading voice in sleep and myofunctional therapy. She founded the MyoSpot, a practice aimed at amplifying oral wellness to whole body wellness. Through teletherapy, she helps clients of all ages overcome tongue ties, TMJ, sleep apnea, teeth grinding, anxiety, and various breathing and orofacial dysfunctions. She is passionate about education and self-help, and her latest published book, Accomplished, delves into how to sleep better, eliminate burnout, and execute goals. Carice's mission is to transform and positively impact as many households as possible through dynamic breath, brain, and body work. Carice Laguerre, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I am so excited to talk to you because we've never covered anything related to myofunctional therapy on the show. I have mentioned a couple of times how critically important it is to breathe correctly and to be cognizant of how you're breathing throughout the night. But you really dive deep into just how profound it is if you are not paying attention to your oral and facial muscles. And it's honestly astonishing when you start getting into the research about how many problems it can cause. So start us out and just tell us what myofunctional therapy is.
So the easiest way that I can describe it is it's kind of like personal training, but for all the muscles below your eyes, yet still above your shoulder. So we're working with those orofacial and some of the oropharyngeal muscles to really strengthen and learn how to coordinate them so that you can properly use them when you're breathing, chewing, swallowing, and especially when you're sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do you do that? Because, you know, I think when people think about being asleep, they're like, well, I'm asleep. I don't have power and control over what's going on. So how do you approach training the muscles below the eyes and above the neck?
So just like personal training, we're doing a lot of exercises, activities, and it's really going to change that neuromuscular patterning. So we're essentially trying to start off consciously, and then we get into subconscious awareness of what's going on when these muscles are at rest. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty interesting how it all comes together, but typically this is done over a span of time. I'd say like 4 to 6 months. Sometimes it extends out to as much as a year.
Mm-hmm. So what is the optimal face position? Like if you said, oh, you've graduated, you are on it. What does that look like? Because our face does a lot of things for us. It conveys human emotion. It also is critical for our digestion, our breathing, et cetera. So Are all of these muscles supposed to be generally at rest, or are there some that are generally engaged? Like, what does that optimal musculoskeletal structure look like?
I love that question. That's a really great question. So yes, our face does do a lot for us. And we have groups of muscles that are muscles of mastication, which is chewing and so forth. Muscles of facial expression, that's when we're supposed to be using them. These are active muscles, right? These are not passive. So when we are at rest, a lot of those facial muscles need to be relaxed. There shouldn't be tension in the chin, in the cheeks, in the face, anywhere at all. It should be a nice closed lip. And I have to stress that, because lip seal is everything. We need a closed lip. We need our tongue lightly suctioned up to the roof of the mouth. That's going to stimulate your vagus nerve. That's going to be where we really are going to start to stimulate a lot of the breathing and digestion. Okay. You're going to get a lot better use of your salivary glands if you get that tongue up there. And we're just going to be breathing through our nose. So you shouldn't really have any tension at all. No muscles really activated, except for a couple of the muscles of the tongue that are going to keep that tongue lightly suctioned up on the roof of the mouth at rest.
And is the only purpose of that to engage the vagus nerve, or does it serve to protect our airway? Does it have another function?
Oh, our tongue is really, really long. I don't think people think about that very often, but our tongue can go down all the way to like C6, C7 sometimes. So we're looking, yeah.
Whoa.
Cervical spine, just in case anybody was confused about that. But yes, so when we get that tongue up against the roof of the mouth, it does move it up and out of our airway. So it's actually reserving some space back there, right? That's provided that your upper respiratory system is developed adequately, that would give you enough space. But yes, that's going to help with that. And it's going to help to actually maintain the shape of our palate. And then our bottom jaw actually follows the top jaw. So when you have people who have had braces and then a few years pass by, they stop wearing their retainers and like everything's moving and shifting. Our tongue is actually supposed to be like that natural scaffolding that keeps everything and retains the position of these teeth. So once things start shifting back, you know that something's not right, that we don't have our scaffolding where it should be.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about what you just said, which is you can't overemphasize the importance of your mouth being closed as you breathe. Why is that so important?
It's important for numerous reasons, but one, if we are at rest with that mouth open, we're definitely going to be putting ourselves more prone to dry mouth and reduction of the amount of saliva that's in the oral cavity. That saliva is important for one, maintaining pH of the oral cavity. It's definitely got a lot of wonderful properties that are going to help reduce that bacterial load. And it's just essential, right? We need saliva. So we shouldn't be drying it out. But two, when we're mouth breathing, that's going to create issues with just the quality of air that we're able to intake. So our nose is really designed optimally for breathing. Our nose is going to filter air, it will humidify air, and it will increase our uptake of nitric oxide, which is going to help with that oxygen binding to those receptors, and we'll get our hemoglobin. Everything is going to be working so much better when it comes through the nose. We have no way to filter the air in our mouths when it comes through the mouth. We have no way to moisturize it because remember, now we're losing the salivary content. And we're definitely not going to be increasing. We're going to see a sharp decrease in the amount of nitric oxide that we're able to take in. And so that's going to reduce the quality of that air, leaving you almost in a state of hypoxia where you're not getting the adequate air that you need, the adequate oxygen. And so that's going to impact numerous things because we see that when we're not breathing properly, it creates a cognitive decline. You can't think as well. You definitely don't sleep as well. You can't perform as well. You're going to find yourself struggling.
And so I'm just imagining you like walking through the grocery store and seeing somebody who's breathing with a slack jaw and just like twitching and, you know, and having that internal battle of like, do I say something or do I not? So take us through the lifespan, you know, starting from birth, early childhood. How can incorrect breathing affect us across the entirety of our lives?
So it starts really young, because development, especially craniofacial development, so that whole skull and development within it, that happens rather rapidly. You'd be surprised to know that by the time you're in that age group of 4 to 6, about 60% of that craniofacial growth is done. So starting off from infancy, if you are mouth breathing, that is going to impact, one, how you're going to develop with the craniofacial structures. Everything is going to be smaller, more narrow, because you're not really going to have your scaffolding where it should be, right? You don't have your mouth closed. Two, it's going to impact your sleep. It's surprising to me that we didn't discover that children suffer from sleep apnea until 1976. That's within our lifetime that we didn't know that children actually can stop breathing at night. So when you're getting poor oxygen during the day, you're definitely getting it at night. And children who suffer from obstructive sleep apnea are definitely going to have a lot more issues with behavioral impulses, hyperactivity. They're going to have issues with their eating, being able to digest well. And they're definitely going to have a lot of sleep issues, which can result into such a domino effect of so many other things with learning disabilities and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So now what about when we're a little bit older, you know, so 4 to 6, it's really important, but I'm assuming that a lot of adolescents, teens, and adults suffer from incorrect oral function.
Absolutely. So 4 to 6, like I said, 60% of that growth is already done. So by the time that you've already hit 6, you've only got, 60% is what I said, right? 60% is already done. So you've only got the 40% left. So between the time that you're 6 to 12, there's only another 40% of growth. So you've lost a lot there. By the time you hit that 12 and then you get into your teenage years, you're pretty much done with your craniofacial growth. So a lot of our population, we're seeing an increase in the amount of people that wind up needing braces and even more so expansion. So now you're talking about more intervention. And if you get into when you are a teenager and probably like those early adult years of 20 to 23, we might be talking surgical interventions. Now, when things aren't developing right, you'll find that a lot of people are unaware that the roof of the mouth is actually the floor of the nose, right? So you'll have a lot of people who suffer with a lot of issues with the nose as far as deviated septums, because when that palate's not growing well, the palate's the roof of the mouth, when the palate is not growing well, that's going to alter the septum and the trajectory of the septum's growth. So you start to see a lot of those nasal issues where you get a lot of allergies and a lot of issues because it compounds as you age. So as you've gotten older now, you're starting to see these things. Your turbinates are too large. You're struggling with tonsils and adenoids that are just too big, frequent throat infections, and the sleep issues are always going to compound. They almost never resolve themselves just magically. So it's going to compound as you age. So as you're getting older and things are not as wide and your upper respiratory system is compromised, you're going to struggle with a lot of the same cognitive issues. You're definitely going to see a compounding effect on your sleep, where not sleeping well now is going to lead to significant sleep disorders, more obvious sleep disorders, obstructive sleep apnea occurring earlier in life. It's not just the overweight man with a large neck who's over 50 that is suffering from obstructive sleep apnea. It's at every age and stage that you can suffer from the potential to stop breathing at night. And that's going to impact growth significantly.
And it sounds like what you're implying is that that can even happen in people who are normal body weight.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And definitely normal body weight, because the weight is hardly the issue, right? So when it's an overweight man, yes, and with a large neck circumference, then you're going to have a lot of weight and pressure against those muscles. But when you just have lax musculature because it hasn't developed right, or you just don't have enough airway space to begin with, and those muscles all relax at night, that's going to give you a much more compromised area. So it wouldn't really matter whether you're overweight or underweight. If you don't have that space, that airway is going to collapse.
And you also talk a lot about how the impact of our sleep can lead to misdiagnoses in children, adolescents, adults. What are some of the most common diagnoses that are kind of masquerading as, it's like, dude, it's just a sleep disorder. You know, you're getting diagnosed with this, but really and truly, you're simply not sleeping.
That's a great question. So the biggest one is going to be ADHD. ADHD, we have to remember, is not something that you go and you get like a diagnostic test for. You can't get an MRI or a blood test or something that says 100% without a doubt it's ADHD. It's mostly a symptom-based diagnosis. So when you have a symptom-based diagnosis, you kind of have to look at, okay, what are the other possibilities that this might be? Where do these symptoms overlap? And 70% of the symptoms of ADHD are the same and overlap with the symptoms of a sleep disorder. So then you're going to find yourself in this space where, yes, you could just go with the ADHD diagnosis and you could medicate and try to manage it that way, or you can seek out something that you can get a definitive diagnosis for. You can get a sleep study or a sleep test, a home sleep test, and be able to screen and say, okay, this might be something that's more sleep and breathing related, and there might be other ways that we can come at this and get at these same symptoms.
Well, and what is so terrifying to me about getting a misdiagnosis of ADHD is that the drugs that are used to treat ADHD are really powerful, extremely addictive, and will do nothing to improve your sleep patterns. If anything, they will destroy the sleep patterns. And they also, over the course of time, completely destroy your neurotransmitters. So when you try to come off of the stimulant medications that are used to treat ADHD, now all of a sudden, you don't have any serotonin. You don't have any dopamine. You don't have a ton of even epinephrine because you've just burned it all. You just burned it all. The way that the amphetamine drugs work is they cause, yes, your neurotransmitters to stay in the synapse longer, but they also just cause a massive discharge of dopamine and serotonin, which is why they become so rapidly, rapidly addictive. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Have you been feeling like your energy is not what it used to be, or that you just can't think as clearly as you once did? Or maybe that stress is just always surrounding you and impacting your mood and your behavior. You may be struggling with your overall mental fitness. Mental fitness is not just about brain power. It's about how do we center our focus, gain more confidence, become more resilient towards stress, and improve our physical performance alongside our mental performance. Inside of Amare's Mental Fitness Pack, you'll find three products specifically designed to help improve brain performance, increase energy and endurance, while simultaneously calming the body and brain, helping to lower stress so that you can think more clearly and have a healthy, positive mood. Inside of the Mental Fitness Pack, there are three products. There is Energy Plus, which delivers rapid improvements in both brain and physical performance. There is the Mood Plus, which I can personally attest helped me to have fewer feelings of anxiousness and reduced my restlessness and overall stress levels in just one dose. Then there's the Sleep Plus, which is going to help you to fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer. Believe it or not, mental fitness can also lead to pain. So there is a fourth product in here called Relief Plus that has been scientifically shown to help improve sports recovery and joint health while providing fast-acting and long-lasting relief from occasional aches and pains, which can help you to sleep better, overall enhancing your mental fitness. Get shopping now at lindsayelmore.com/amare. When you shop my link, you will save $10. And when you subscribe and save, you will get an additional 10% off. When you get started with the Mental Fitness Pack, you will be on your way to have improved brain performance and a calmer body and brain. Shop now at lindsayelmore.com/amare to save $10. And now, let's get back to the show. So talk us through some of your favorite exercises that our listeners can do at home to help them improve their sleep.
So one of the best ways that you can help to improve your sleep is to incorporate a nasal hygiene routine. And that's not even an exercise, but nasal hygiene is going to be like key. There's nothing else I would recommend above that. Okay. So we can work on the muscles all day long, but if you're not opening up that nasal passageway, it's not going to do anything for you. So nasal hygiene routine is mostly going to encompass you blowing the nose, making sure you clear it out really well, and then use a saline nasal spray. So a nasal spray, or you can use one of the neti pots where you're really just driving the saline up one nostril and come back out the other one. So you're going to cleanse the passageway in some form or shape. Then it's really good if you are able to incorporate an aromatherapy routine. So whether you're diffusing it or whether you're using a nasal inhaler, it's really good to get some eucalyptus or peppermint and make sure that you're getting that all the way through that upper respiratory system to kind of clear you out, decongest a little bit. Okay. Once you've done that, if you're getting ready for bed, it's really good to use some of the nasal strips, which go on the outside of the nose, or a nasal dilator, which is going to go within the nose, help keep it nice and open. That's going to give you your number one best bet for better sleep. If you're looking for exercises, we want to tone a lot of what's going on with the soft palate and some of the pharyngeal muscles. So there's some really cool exercises that we're able to do for that. And some of them you'd be surprised that it does help to engage that pharyngeal wall. So if you're ever making a fish face, right? If you're ever playing with your child or grandchild and you make a little fish face and you suck in your cheeks and you pucker, what you're going to do is you're going to suck it in really well. Let it go for a popping sound. And I don't know if you felt it. You might want to do it again a couple of times. That way you could feel it, but you feel that soft palate lift and you feel it in the back of the throat a little bit. So it's really going to help to work that pharyngeal wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and it's almost like your pop was so much better than mine. I have pop envy right now, but that's because you practiced it and it's not something I've done. So little popping action. What else?
You're definitely going to work on your tongue and your tongue tone because we want to get that tongue up and out of the airway, right? So we can also pop our tongue. We're going to work on that tongue and palate connection. So if you try to make a clicking sound with your tongue.
Uh-huh.
Did you get it? I didn't hear yours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you didn't hear mine? Oh, it was so good. I was kind of proud of it. I hope our listeners heard it. It was like a...
There we go.
There we go.
Good. I want you to slow it down. We're going to focus on trying to maintain that seal. So we'll try to hold that for a certain period of time and then snap it down. That way we can work on engaging that connection. And we really want to stimulate that connection because there's a lot of proprioceptors between the top of the tongue and the roof of the mouth that once they connect, it does engage it in a wonderful way for neuropatterning.
Okay, so now that's a word that I don't think we've dropped on the show before. Talk to us about what is proprioception.
Sensory stimulation, honestly, really, proprioceptors are how you're going to distinguish from, you know, certain types of senses. So how do we know kiwi is fuzzy or like okra how do we know that okra has that certain thing about it that mm-hmm. some people really love and others really don't?
And I think of proprioception too is like knowing where your body is in space, you know, being able to like, I know where my right hand is right now.
Yes, very much so. I don't know that I associate that very much with the tongue and the roof of the mouth, but those proprioceptors on the feet and the hands, oh my gosh, I love that. Getting that stimulated while we're working on a lot of those orofacial, some of their oropharyngeal muscles, it really does help to engage, to really know where your tongue is, because oftentimes none of us are paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. I mean, you'll get asked in yoga classes sometimes, is your tongue on the roof of your mouth or on the bottom? And, you know, I am grateful my tongue generally is in the position that you're recommending that it stay in. But just that awareness of like my tongue is down, kind of stagnant in the base of my mouth, is not where it is supposed to be, because it's supposed to be elevated, which engages the vagus nerve, as you said, and then protects that airway. So I'm interested in knowing, so, you know, you're saying improve your nasal hygiene routine is a great way to improve sleep. Are there any other specifics? Because, you know, we've talked on the show about having a cold, dark room, a standard bedtime. Are there any exercises that can help to relax as well as engage the muscles in our face that are going to help us to get more effective sleep?
So we're definitely, well, it's going to vary from person to person, right? Because when I'm talking about, you know, really working with people as a personal trainer of sorts for those muscles, we're talking about personalized, where areas are you compensating and you're overusing muscles, and where are you underutilizing muscles? Because, you know, sometimes no two people present the exact same. So sometimes there's a lot of stress and tension in other places and we have to relax. And so I'm hesitant to give you something that's like going to work for everybody, because what works for everybody?
Right? Nothing. Thank you. Not a single thing works for everybody.
Yeah. So I would say definitely just being mindful of it. Meditation. Mm-hmm. Meditation is a really great thing, and being focused on your breath, make sure that it's coming from your nose and that you're not overly feeling tension in any of your facial muscles whatsoever, because we don't want that. We don't want that. We really want to be aware of our tongue and relax our face. And that is something that is so difficult for many people to do, just relax their face. We carry so much tension and emotion here. And so meditation is a great way to let go and release.
And you don't even realize it. You know, you don't even realize it. If you are ever in a yoga class where it's like, relax. I had a yoga teacher one time say, relax the tops of your ears, relax your forehead, relax the space behind your ears. And then he goes, just relax something, you know, and he comes by, because yoga's hard, you know, it's a tough practice. And he comes by and he looks at me and my brow's all furrowed and I'm struggling to maintain my breath. And he's like, relax your brow, you know, really, really relax it. And it is very, very difficult. Now, I hope this question doesn't catch you off guard. And if we don't want to talk about it, we don't have to talk about it. But a lot of people have had major changes to their sense of smell, their sense of taste, the way that they, you know, are able to perceive foods and flavors secondary to a COVID infection. And so COVID infects all of the surrounding cells. Have you worked with any patients post-COVID, and people are just desperate to get their sense of smell back?
Yes, I can't say that we've gotten anyone's sense of smell back. I mean, I feel like that just takes its own time. But I have worked with people post-COVID, and it is more difficult for them actually to do some of the exercises to be able to maintain and sustain the changes that I'm trying to induce. So there have been major changes that I've seen since COVID where we really can't get that engagement or awareness. The proprioception is altered. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it more difficult, but it's not impossible. It just takes longer.
Yeah, it does take longer. And I've talked to peeps a lot about just how tough it is to retrain a sense of smell that has gotten out of whack. It's very, very difficult. So let's talk now about recognizing abnormal sleep patterns. Talk to us about snoring. You know, lots of people snore for lots of different reasons. Is snoring ever beneficial for us, or in your opinion, is it generally harmful?
So when we think about snoring and the sound that's occurring from snoring, typically snoring is the sound of air meeting resistance as it's coming through that upper respiratory system, right? It's passing through like a very narrow way, right? So their muscles have laxed and now it's struggling to get through. So it's vibrating through as it's getting through. And nothing about that is normal. Air meeting resistance in your airway. That's where it belongs. It's supposed to be inaudible. We shouldn't hear it. So nothing about that is really good ever. We do get snoring, yes, when there are times of infection. And so we have inflammation in those areas. And then at that point in time, okay, yes, we would say that that's a reasonable time. But if you find yourself snoring all the time, it's a problem because you're not oxygenating properly. We're not getting in that adequate amount of air. It is struggling to get into your body. And that's not what we want. We need air. We can go for a while without food. We can go maybe a few days without water. We cannot go but minutes without air. So it's your most vital system.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do store some amount of oxygen in our body that we can release, but you're maybe buying a couple minutes. I've heard people say that you store 4 hours worth of oxygen in your spleen, and I'm like, yeah, right. Let's try to not breathe for 4 hours and see how that goes for us. So you work with a lot of different people with a lot of different disease states. So tell us some of your favorite success stories that you have had over the years.
Ooh, I think that is such a great question because I love to talk about these wonderful people that I work with. I have this one woman who I talk about like way too much. I probably should start paying her for how much I talk about her success story. But she had a very strong moderate case of obstructive sleep apnea, was dependent on a CPAP, had some issues personally, deaths in the family, and then, you know, a job loss. And she was just kind of in a downward spiral. And working together, I think it was so monumental to her just being able to sleep. To sleep did so much for her. We got her off of her CPAP, which is wonderful and something I don't guarantee anybody. Occasionally it happens, but it was fantastic to get her off of her CPAP, to get her out of obstructive sleep apnea. That changed so much with her mood and her life and her career trajectory. She was able to now go back and kind of just get into a better space. I'm thrilled with the fact that we were able to do all that for her, because when I met her, she was not in a good way. And then we left and she was totally brand new person. I think my favorite success story is definitely my son. My son, we've had a lot of issues when he was younger. He's 17 now, but when he was younger, there was always some issue with attention. And we really fought that ADHD diagnosis for a while. We were like, no, we're not going to medicate. We're not going to medicate. Then we're like, okay, finally, we're going to medicate. But then I came into this brand new world of myofunctional therapy and all the different things that, you know, come with it. And it was very sad to me that we met with his neurologist, pediatric neurologist, after we had gotten his sleep study, after we had gotten him better sleep, after we had gotten him off the medications and started to see him as just this brand new, different person. He wasn't on this medication that was really just drowning out who he was. Mm-hmm. It was very sad to see his pediatric neurologist. And she said, oh, you know, there is an association between sleep and the ADHD system. And, you know, I really wish that you told me that he was having poor sleep.
It's like, I really wish you had asked neurologists, like, if you're about to diagnose a child with ADHD and put them on very powerful, very addictive medications, why don't we do our due diligence?
Exactly. That's what I said. I'm like, what is this? You know, who's working for who?
Oh, there is a whole episode right there in what you just said, who's working for who. But that is a conversation that I have had with many other guests. So talk to us a little bit about, once you become consciously aware throughout the day, how do you start crafting that unconscious awareness to where you can do things like stop grinding your teeth or stop if you're using accessory muscles to breathe or whatever it is throughout the evening? How do you craft that unconscious awareness?
We start to build it into the daily routine. So it starts off very, very conscious, where we're actually monitoring, and 7 times a day, I have them actually taking note of what's going on. Are we grinding? What's stimulating that? What are we getting out of it once we're grinding? Is it like a stress response? Is it something that's happening so that we can breathe a little better?
Or is it because of the ADHD medicine that you are taking, which is a very common side effect of stimulant medications?
But we start out very, very conscious, and then we start to weed out the conscious by bringing it into daily life. So we associate with a sound or with a color, that checking, that monitoring, and then eventually we just start to wean it down to the point where it's like, you know what? I was really conscious of my tongue today, and I had no idea why. It's just because, you know, we've just programmed it into you at this point. That's all you think about is your tongue, your face, what's going on here.
Yeah, I love that so much. Just starting with the conscious behavior so that you train the unconscious systems that are underlying all of the problems. Now, I love Dave Asprey. He is always saying something controversial. And yesterday or 2 days ago, he did a post about science has determined 6.5 hours of sleep is the exact amount of sleep that every person should get. Less than that, you have cognitive problems. More than that, you have cognitive problems. And I was like, I don't know what kind of, like, I don't know who you are, but 6.5 hours sleep for me, I would be tired. I would be very, very tired, and I would not have enough time to allow my brain to drain, to allow my immune system to repair, all of the amazing, wonderful things that happen when we are asleep. So is there a best amount of time to sleep, or, you know, is more sleep always better sleep?
There is no adequate time for everyone. And I think that is the biggest myth that people keep perpetuating. And it is just not true. There are so many people on various spectrums. There are people who, you know, need to have 10 to 12 adults who need to have 10 to 12 hours of sleep. Otherwise, they are functioning very poorly. So you can't say that 6.5 would be a really great mark for them, because that's only half of what they typically would get in order to have a really productive, functioning, cognitive, aware day. Otherwise, they're going to struggle. And then there are people who get less and are able to feel very well restored. They wake up the next day, they're able to function. They don't feel tired and lethargic. So there's no one thing that fits everybody. I think that's such a big myth. There's a large spectrum, and anywhere you fit on that spectrum, when you are waking up feeling restored and you're not waking up feeling unrested and like you haven't revived, like you can't really process what's going on, that's when there's a problem with the duration of time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. I think one of the biggest markers of health is just, do you feel good? Do you fall asleep at night when the sun's been down a couple hours? Do you wake up in the morning feeling restored, rejuvenated, and ready to take on the day? If that is happening in your life, congratulations, you're doing better than a lot of people, are, you know, I know there's not one perfect amount of time. Do you think that there is a minimum amount of time? Like, because, I mean, I'm thinking, like, if you're not getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep, is there a minimum in your opinion?
In my opinion, I would say I agree with you. I usually say around 5 at least. I think that's a great, you know, starting point. And many people you'll find are between that spectrum of 5 to 10 hours. And so it can go anywhere between. I think less than that is, I don't know how you would be able to cycle through enough REM, but to each his own.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. If you listeners would like to know more about Carissa's work, head to www.themyospot. That's themyospot.com. That's www.themyospot.com to find out more about how orofacial dysfunction may be causing you to have many different misdiagnoses. Carissa Laguerre, thank you so much for coming in today and being a guest on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
If you've been struggling to feel your best and feel like that food, sleep, relaxation, none of it is truly working, maybe you need to up your game with some infrared light and negative ion therapy. Infrared light penetrates deep into your body, going through your skin to muscles, nerves, and bones. Infrared light then helps to boost local circulation, bringing oxygen and anti-inflammatory molecules, as well as flushing away toxins. Therefore, infrared heat has been shown to reduce muscle pain, joint pain and stiffness, arthritic pain. It also helps to reduce stress and fatigue and supports the immune system. Negative ions act as attractors to bacteria and allergens in your environment, and they can help to inhibit free radical oxidation as well as reduce exposures to heavy metals, viruses, and other harmful elements, and can help to balance the body and the mind. The Amethyst Biomat is specifically designed to help provide infrared light as well as negative ions by electrically charging a mat full of amethyst crystals. It truly is an amazing experience to lay on a biomat. I have one as well as the tourmaline and amethyst pillow, and they have become part of my daily relaxation routine. If you want to get one of your very own amethyst biomats, head to lindsayelmore.com/biomat and you can be on your way to relaxation and less stress and fatigue throughout your day. Head to lindsayelmore.com/biomat to shop now. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag @Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.